spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to 3CR Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Spoken word and poetry come from the heart and touch all the topics peculiar to the human condition. As such, there may be content in this show that could cause distress. Please practice self-care when listening and speak to someone if you need to. For the next half an hour, I'm going to be interviewing poet Sarah St. James. Sarah St. James, or Sadie, is a trans woman and spoken word poet. Originally born and raised in Mianjin, she's been based in Nam since 2018. Her writing explores themes of identity, accountability and survival through the lenses of gender, sexuality and familial dysfunction. With a background in theatre, Sarah's work lends itself best to live performance. She's been speaking her poems aloud since participating in Ruckus Poetry Slams and Roving Conspiracies open mic events in 2014. Sarah's writing has been published in the anthology Influx, Trans and Gender Diverse Reflections and Imaginings, as well as Chaotic Musings Volume 3. Her first solo publishing venture was a hand-bound anthology, The Brown Paper Diaries, soon to be available in print. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you, Indrani.
Reading your bio, I'm really curious about your theatre background, and I'm wondering how it's influenced your writing.
Yeah, so I think if anything, it's more impacted the way I perform and share my work than necessarily the way I write. I started doing community theatre when I was 10 years old. I was doing like pantomime at the Brisbane Arts Theatre where I used to watch shows as a kid. So I've always loved characters and performance. I really loved the ability to go and get your autograph signed by like the villains after the show. And so I think that imbued this very like storytelling nature to the way that I express myself. I was already a budding neurodivergent child who was always going to be loud. But yeah, I think for me, the biggest evidence I see of it is when people say that I have a good stage presence. And yeah, I guess in some ways that's the thing that almost takes the least, not the least amount of effort, but it happens very naturally for me to be up there and to be in front of a room full of people. But the more different part is definitely what you're saying, you know, like when you're performing a script, it's just about the memorization. Whereas I think that when I first started performing at 18, I was studying drama at the time, and in some ways performance poetry almost took over, I think. Like I would still love to perform, and acting is something that interests me, but I think that for me, realizing that I could perform myself was probably the biggest door that opened for me.
So was that because there's power in speaking your own words and telling your own story? Is that what drew you to the world of poetry and performing poetry?
100%. And I think it's unfortunate, but I do want to like touch on it now, that I think the fact that as a trans person, there's less avenues to act. So it was sort of a double-edged sword in that, okay, I can be me, I can be on stage and do this thing that gives me that fire inside, which is simultaneously less and less available to me now as I'm coming into who I am as a person. So that was interesting. I think there's a line in Holding the Man by Timothy Conagrave, gay monkeys don't get work. And so that is something that I was already grappling with before transitioning, even being a more feminine person, being more flamboyant and less able to play the straight roles. And then transitioning into a trans woman, the roles that are available are almost exclusively like one indie role every 6 months in this film about a coming of age and this trans woman, and she doesn't really have many friends. But so, yeah, I think for me, it was really lovely to be able to tell that story and let that story change and develop in the way that I feel like to some degree trans representation doesn't develop or change as quickly as trans people themselves do. And so sometimes it can be frustrating to wish that this role existed Whereas I think poetry and performance of spoken word or just storytelling gives me that avenue.
So it's like you're speaking your truth, and in speaking your truth, you're then being that role. And I suppose I'm going to say role model because, you're up there and you're performing, so then you're a role model for other people in the trans community who can see your journey and follow you.
And also for cis people. Like, I think if I as you said, be that role, like in my mind's eye, I just saw this cis person sitting in an audience of a poetry open mic planning to write some trans narrative and then being able to actually create a more filled out, more dimensional story, person, experience, or even just understanding of what sort of shortcomings trans people face in our day-to-day lives. I think a lot of people, something for me is the parent thing. I deal a lot with my parents, my relationship to them, and the way that they've fallen short. And I also grapple a lot with the fact that that is almost the most comfortable form of trans trauma to have for cis people, because they're like, oh, your parents didn't accept you, did they kick you out? But yeah, I think telling a story that makes it more approachable and more understandable for cis people, that we actually have so many more things in common than cis people often give themselves credit for. Like, we often have the exact same level of disconnect with our parents, and the transness is just one of the items on the list that they don't meet us in the middle about.
I think it's really interesting that you're saying that, and I was thinking as you were speaking that 100% most people would have that feeling at some point in their life of disconnection from their parents and them not getting where they're coming from or where they're going or what they want to do or who they want to be. So it's great that you're talking about that. And then talking about how someone can write roles, you know, being more informed. But also, I mean, for me personally, I'm very passionate about own voices, and I think we need people who have those voices to write those roles. You know, not just have somebody who's, in inverted commas, different, you know, being the side character in a story, but being the main character written by someone who understands them.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And who knows them. Like, that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I want to see, you know, when I'm watching something.
Yeah, and I guess in some ways that was the sort of the aha moment with spoken word poetry for me, was before I even transitioned, it was this realization that this stage and this space was completely malleable in the moment. You could, yeah, you could be raw, you could be honest, and like I said earlier, yeah, your story gets to grow and change and develop with you. And I think that that's something that just never goes away when it comes to these spaces. You can reemerge in the poetry scene after 5 years and people will be talking about bigger events and global things, but at its core, there's still so many of the same through lines of what makes people human. And what things we feel so compelled to share in those spaces.
And going back to what you're saying before, we do have so much in common, don't we? Underneath all of our differences and all the things that set us apart, we have all these things in common, like wanting to be loved and, you know, that need for shelter and food and all those kind of things. They make us all up, right?
Something that I find really beautiful and, like, lovely to see is when other women will come up to me after I've performed. I have a handful of poems that are very much about my experience as a trans woman and sort of the intersection of fetishization and disgust and, like, all the different things that get projected onto you. And then I often have, yeah, cis women of a multitude of different life experiences and backgrounds will come up to me and almost ask permission to connect with the poem in a way. And when I respond to that, it's a gratitude. There's nothing to ask for. Like, I'm so glad that you saw yourself in this, because the whole point was that everyone could see themselves in this. I didn't want to write a trans poem. I wanted to write a poem about womanhood that, yeah, like, allowed so many women to see all the things that we share.
And men, right? And men to see what it's like to be a woman.
Trans men, even cisgender men do experience so many of these things, and It's lovely to be on the receiving end or participating in conversations where you watch people give themselves permission to feel their own hardships or to live in the things that have informed themselves, rather than just going, oh, I guess there's this thing buried inside me. Like, when you talk about it, it gives everyone the opportunity to, like, break down those walls or have those conversations with the people in their life that have left them feeling some type of way.
Oh, man, so many questions and so many, oh, I don't know, different things I could say right now. I guess I'm curious then. So you're talking about your journey as a trans woman and taking that onto the stage and performing it. So I'm wondering then, when it comes to writing poetry, like, what does that look like for you? Is there particular events or things that happen that inspire you to write, or is it mood-based? Like, what is it that inspires the writing?
That's a very, very good question. I'm going to let myself sit with it rather than just firing off, because I think 2022 for me was a point where that practice began to change. Not even so much as the way I was doing it was different, but the way that I viewed the way I was doing it. So turning my notes app into poetry, it's this consistent thing. I think in 2020, when a lot of people were just sitting at home, we became our own entertainers. We had to give ourselves, weight, basically. And so suddenly these things that you were getting off your chest weren't just a thing. They were getting off your chest. They were potential art. And I think that's a really big thing for me, is to view the things that you need to get out of you as potential art. And sometimes when it comes out, it will be ugly and it will be incomplete. And the only thing you can say is that it's out. And so those are the ones that you leave. And sometimes you come back to it and you're like, wow, I created the skeleton of a poem. But yeah, I think for me, I find myself often trying to write through really hard times. But the best feeling for me, and I was talking about it the other night to someone, is when you feel like you haven't been writing and then you go back and find that you've created all of these things around you that are just waiting for you to see them as worth finishing.
Oh, so you have been jotting things down but feeling like, oh, they're not anything. And then time ticks by and you go back and you're like, oh, actually.
Yeah, or something else will contextualize it. Like I started the beginning of something that wasn't even a poem. It was just me getting out my train of thought. And then that became a poem about engaging with human beings, because I interrupted this moment of introspection to engage with the human being that was with me. Yeah, so I think it's something that at first, years ago, I used to feel like I had to sit down to write a poem. And I think that the thing that has made me feel so much more comfortable and at home in myself as a writer is not feeling that way anymore. Not feeling like I need to sit down to write a poem. And also, when I sit down to write a poem, the thing that comes out doesn't have to be fully formed or perfect.
So does that mean now, instead of deliberately carving out a space to write a poem and sitting down to write, is it more like you're following your muse and a poem comes knocking and you're like, okay, I'll just scribble you down quickly?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think a really good metaphor for that is the waking up in the middle of the night. Like, you realize that you've really started to follow the train of thought when you let yourself climb out of bed at 3 a.m. to write that poem, because you know that it's not going to be the same in the morning. Yeah. So like, sitting with the moment, letting things ruminate, letting them be, and also, yeah, like letting yourself view the non-artistic elements of storytelling as something that you're still putting out into the world is really nice. I think sometimes I've read something that to me, it was just a literal train of thought word vomit, and some of those can be the ones that captivate people, or they're the ones that stick on people's mind. And I think that is something that I love telling other people, that basically, like, letting other people know that there's nothing that makes you a poet, really.
Except maybe saying that you are a poet.
But that's what I'm saying, is that so many people say they're not a poet.
Mm.
And I my regular open mic event at Bar Usu is this weekly event. We really love first timers. And so sometimes someone who would never have called themselves a poet reads something that they would never have called a poem and captivates a room full of people who were there to consume poetry. And so I think, yeah, there is nothing that makes you a poet, I think. And that's almost, yeah, my radical view of the situation in a way.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Transfamily runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Transfamily are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Transfamily is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show, 855 on the AM dial. My name is Indrani Pereira and I'm interviewing poet Sarah St. James. Before the break, we were chatting about performing poetry, about what it means to be a poet, about being a trans woman and all of the joy and the challenges that that brings. And now I think we are going to hear some poems, so, you know, stick with us. But the conversation is brilliant. And I just want to ask Sarah a little bit more about her poetry and if you've got any recurring themes or motifs in your poetry.
I think that the ones that are the strongest are the ones that have evolved as we've been talking these last like 15-ish minutes, which is, yeah, like my relationship to my parents. And I think at first when I was 18, I didn't even know all the ways that my parents were going to let me down yet, basically. My poetry was so angry and unfiltered. And over the years, I've done 10 years worth of therapy and just imbued that into my poetry. And there's also this sort of anti-hopelessness message, I feel, in amongst it, because sometimes you will pour years of your life and money and time, and you will have those really hard, honest conversations, and your parents will still only ever be able to be where they are. Like, you can't actively force them into this version of healing or this version of understanding you that they aren't going to inhabit on their own. So I think for me, it's, yeah, the real deep complexity that comes with the relationship to parents. It's the disappointment that comes with not being met where you want to be or where you need to be or where you feel you should be by these people. But in amongst it also is this through line of just not having a choice in the matter, I guess, and what it means to do with that lack of choice. Yeah. Like, I chose to not talk to them, and I chose to talk to them, and yeah. And my art sort of lets you know whether, like, what I feel about that or how that turned out, but I don't think that my art is designed to tell you whether either of those decisions is a good one or a bad one or the right one. So yeah, that, I think, that nature of being created by another person and what it means to look to them. And yeah, gender in the more nitty-gritty, complex things of just what does it mean to be a trans woman beyond being valid, you know? Beyond, oh, women are women, what does it mean to understand the equity and the differences of our life experiences, but also the ways that the things we have in common can make us better allies to each other? Realizing what it means to be waiting in the wings to be an ally, I think. Instead of listening and hoping that someone will tell you all the right steps, just sort of letting your empathy lead and really listening to what gaps exist in this world and where you can help other people to bridge those gaps. And yeah, and I think sort of suicidal ideation is a big part of it. I lost a lot of friends and acquaintances to suicide in a very short period of time, from 2019 to about 2022 or three. Yeah, and so something that I really grapple with is the decisiveness to live and persevere and the privileges that have made that possible for me when it was at its worst, when I could have so easily ceased to exist. And yeah, what it means to try and, like I said, bridge those gaps, bring other people to a position of survival that maybe their material position, like their material circumstances, wouldn't have otherwise provided them with.
Oh, wow. I've just all the feels here today on the show. And Yeah, here's to good allies and support, you know, and helping each other out, right? It's community. Yeah, we need to look after each other.
Mm.
So poetry, do we have some poems that we can share?
100%. So this piece is called Cluster B to Audie HD. I wrote it in September this year, and it was sort of written for a poetry slam in some ways. And so that made it a bit more, it made me touch back into the sort of aggressiveness that I've had to use in the past to be heard, but through the lens of trying to use that to add power to something that didn't necessarily need to be boosted, I guess. I've always been guilty of getting hung up in too deep, like always thinking someone else felt the same amount as me, of this thing without a name. I never entered into a serious relationship until at 22 I did, and it was like carrying around a match, trying to keep it lit. I could turn so quickly, lose myself to myself for the day, for the night, for the conversation, for the fight. I'd been diagnosed at 16 with depression, anxiety, and OCD, then at 20 with schizoaffective bipolar. I was just coming out as trans, messily, and to me it said, you're broken, and that can be fixed with meds. But it kind of couldn't. I took the meds every day, and I felt like shit when I missed them, but I couldn't exactly pinpoint what they did. I should have quit drinking, but I didn't. And so I stayed messy, and I stayed broken. I learned I had to go back to the man in the chair who doesn't really care about your feelings, but will still clinically pathologize them. The thing is, you have to know what to ask for, apparently. It has to be the reason for your meeting, because otherwise, if you're not the shape of the picture in his book, you're just messy and broken. And why talk about past visits? Why list diagnoses? Because they were wrong or incomplete, and they were costly. They created labels and stigma that I still carry, but also because there are so many people who write off caring or listening when they think someone is messy and broken. Because sometimes the fix is meds, sometimes it isn't. But the man in the chair who doesn't really care is the only place where those sorts of decisions can be made. So you have to go, you have to pay if you need something day to day, and I did, and I do, and at 16, my parents' biggest concern was not what to do about my depression, but how to hide it. And maybe there's nothing wrong with you, just a brain moving too fast, or trauma you still carry in all the ways that hurts the most, and hell, maybe it's both. I know that for me, the meds for ADHD, not a stimulant, but something that tweaked those voices in my head, that made them my own, made things easier, bit by bit, then all at once. I found myself inside myself. I yearned for another life, not one 25 years in, led by someone who relished being messy and broken, but also just couldn't afford to afford another visit to the man in the chair who never really cares, except when I went that last time, the man in the chair cried as he set me free to live the one I have. Because we're all messy and nobody's broken, but something else had to change, so I never drank again.
Oh, wow. That was an incredible story and a journey that you took us on just then. And then the ending was so good because you brought that back to the start, or maybe it was partway through where you were talking about maybe I should have given up drinking, and then you did.
Well, I realized as I was performing that poem that it touched on the one theme of my poetry that I didn't mention, which is, yeah, sobriety is... I still smoke weed. I'm California sober, you know? Like, sobriety for me is this complicated, probably still evolving journey, but removing the factor that was alcohol specifically has been just life altering for me, and it coincided with my ADHD diagnosis, because being in that room was the first time someone ever mentioned that alcohol affects people with ADHD worse. All of the things that it does to you that are bad are things that we already struggle with. If we haven't been diagnosed yet, then impulsivity control, and things like rejection sensitivity are all worsened by hangovers, by binge drinking, by consuming people in these spaces that are very impermanent. Yeah, and so my relationship to alcohol is one of my ongoing themes as well. And I think, yeah, I forget how much it embodies itself in my work.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I had no idea about the relationship between alcohol and ADHD. Until someone spells it out, you don't realize, right?
Wild. I was literally sitting in this Zoom call with a psychiatrist. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I reckon we might, if we're lucky, have time to squeeze in one more poem, and I'd love to hear another one, and I'm sure the listeners would too.
Sitting with it. There are worlds of difference between positivity that seeks to change and that which seeks to sustain. When everything is and the world feels unfair, you don't want to hear that everything happens for a reason. You need to be told that you didn't deserve it. Toxic positivity stares you down. It asks you to pinpoint the bright side like your lowest moments are a pop quiz. Tells you to smile for the camera so that you can have a saccharine memory rather than a hard truth. That said, the bright side is not the enemy. I used to get impenetrably sad, held onto it steadfastly, the only thing I could control. There is a certainty to knowing that it will all go the way you think, to seeing everything ignite in real time, to repeating the cycle. And the thing about neutral positivity, about preparing for the best, is that it equalizes things a little. It doesn't paint fanciful stories or prod smiles from frowns. It makes you laugh at just the right time, after sitting with you while you cry. It doesn't say you got this when you don't. It says I got you, we got this. It asks if you need to collapse into yourself for a bit, or for 2 years. It shows you how to ask for help without shame. Neutral positivity takes enough of a risk to say it is going to be okay, because it holds you tight when it doesn't feel that way. You may have to wait and work and fight, and the good times might feel short when they end. But the more I prepared for the best, the more I equalized the layers of negativity, I saw how many of them I carried around with me. I gave myself perspective. I gave myself a break. I learned not to need a reset every time that things felt bleak. I don't miss who I used to be, but I know how hard things were for me. So now I live with what I've got. I meet my old self at parties. I pass the baton to the one who needs it next.
Thanks for listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show. I'm Indrani Pereira, and you've been listening to the incredible Sarah St. James. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a lovely, session.
It's been amazing. And if you can't get enough of poetry and would love to hear some live spoken word, Brilliant Literary Journal, Calliope X are holding their annual fundraiser on Sunday the 30th of November 2025 in Thornbury, featuring poets from a stellar lineup including Manish Anjali, Elena Gomez and Tony Birch, plus music from the Black Sea Ensemble. It's sure to be a fabulous event of words and music. Tickets are available at events.humanitics.com/CalliopeX-speaks. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, you can play it again over on our podcast page, where you also get an extensive archive of spoken word. And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more spoken word goodness.